Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Welcome to Special Edition, a weekly look at the issues in the news and the personalities shaping the stories.
Thanks for joining me on Special Edition. I'm Paula Degnan. This week, Odyssey's Nikki Stone sat down recently with Congressman Dan Muser to talk about what's happening in Washington. We'll hear some of her chat with him. We're also bringing back, because you asked for it, a discussion on the hashtag AskForEcho campaign on heart valve disease. We're also going to be talking about something in the news, monkeypox, with Dawn Webster. We're going to meet Dan Griffin. He's from Luzerne County, and he's on his way to help rebuild war-torn Ukraine. Starting us off, Jason Brinner. He's one of the co-chairs for the Hazleton Rotary Wine and Beer Festival coming up later this month, and he's here with your invitation to be there for the fun and all the details. Jason, you are with the Hazleton Rotary, and for folks who might not know, what kind of projects are the Hazleton Rotary involved in?
We're involved in a number of community projects in the greater Hazleton area. We both fund outside organizations as well as do our own internal projects. Some of the internal things we do is we have a kids coach program. We have a couple of scholarship programs for students looking to either go to university or even in the trade schools. We have a Christmas shopping spree thing for children who maybe are less fortunate than us. We do a number of things for feeding the homeless and the veterans and, again, those who are down on their luck. And then we do a lot of support things for our police, our firefighters, our medical personnel, et cetera. So in general, I would just say that we are an organization in service of our community.
And one of the things you mentioned, the police, there was a dog involved?
Yes. So we just recently celebrated our centennial year, and we would do what I would call a spending blowout. And so we went and purchased a police dog for the Hazleton Police, and we were fortunate enough to meet the dog a couple of weeks ago. And he is completely trained. He's part of the force now. His name is A. Sheridan. You know, he does everything from drug sniffing to apprehension to everything. He's multi-purpose for the police force, and I know that they've already fallen in love with him, and as have we.
Well, I just wanted to give our listeners an opportunity to get some of the background on Hazleton Rotary, because all of the things that you mentioned, of course, need support. And you have a big fundraiser coming up at the end of August that I think everybody's going to want to be there. So give us the details, when and where and what.
Yeah, so on Saturday, August 27th, from 12 noon until 6 p.m. at the Hazleton City View Park, we will be hosting our annual wine and beer festival. So this is our organization's largest fundraiser of the year. It involves exactly what the title has in it. We invite wine and beer vendors from craft breweries and wineries in our area to come up, show off their products, hopefully sell some to the public, And then we have entertainment and craft vendors and food vendors and stuff like that. Basically, it's a party for a day. It's a great, and it's all for in the support of a great cause.
And when it comes to the wine and craft beer vendors, and they're all local, right? Or they're not too far away?
Correct. Yeah, we focus on, you know, we're very fortunate here in our area that we have, you know, a lot of both wine and beer artisans out there. I'm a beer drinker personally, but I could tell you that some of the craft beer places we have here are just absolutely phenomenal, and we're very happy to be able to host them and let them show off their respective products.
You also mentioned entertainment. Who's going to be there for that?
Yeah, so we're pleased to have Ostrich Hat and Guilty Pleasure each do a set, and then in the interlude we're going to have a couple of DJs also do a set. So we'll have live music throughout the course of the afternoon.
And City View Park, what a great location! But it's not your first time there, right?
No, this is our second time there. Previous years we had been in some other locations in the Hazleton area, but we're thrilled to be back at City View Park. It has you know, some permanent structures. It has a great stage, you know, access to electricity and stuff for us, and plumbing and all that kind of stuff. So it really did. Last year we found that it was the perfect venue for our festival.
Now, of course, I know that if the Hazleton Rotary is having a fundraiser, there would never ever be any rain, but if there is, well, you're still on, right?
That is absolutely true. We are rain or shine. You know, last year we didn't quite have rain, but I would say we had some questionable weather at best last year, and we were able to, the one thing about this venue is with some of the permanent structures, we were able to move what we could, you know, under roof, and we still had a great event. And you know, last year was a record turnout for us, and we're hoping to beat that this year.
Well, let's let everybody know you have some tickets, and there's different tickets that people can get. So give us that information and explain to us how that works.
So we really want to have everyone purchase their tickets in advance if they can. And so tickets in advance are $25 a piece. Now you have to be over 21 to drink. If you're a designated driver or you're under the age of 21, you're still welcome. But tickets are $5 a piece to attend. If you decide to buy the tickets, at the door, they're $30 a piece. And tickets are available from, if you know Hazleton Rotarians, so, you know, we're all over the area. If you know them, you can buy them directly from us, or you can go to hazeltonrotary.org, and we have a link on our website where you can get into our online portal and purchase the tickets online.
And I also understand that on the poster you can scan, there's a QR code there?
There is. If you see some posters, we put posters throughout the community at various businesses. If you see that, you can just take your phone and exactly like you would at a restaurant for a menu or anything like that, scan the QR code. It'll take you right to our website and the portal where you can buy tickets.
All right. Well, it's going to be a wonderful day once again this year. And there are so many different projects. I know that you folks are already planning. I'm sure that all this is going to help. So, Jason, I'm going to turn it over to you. You issue the invitation, the where, the when, the how. It's all yours.
Yeah, so again, come and join us for the Hazleton Rotary Wine and Beer Festival. It's Saturday, August 27th from 12 p.m. until 6 p.m. at the Hazleton City View Park. Tickets are available online, and they're also available at the door. So again, Saturday, August 27th from 12 until 6.
Thanks again to Jason Brenner, one of the co-chairs for the upcoming Hazleton Rotary Wine and Beer Festival later this month. Now we're meeting Dan Griffin. He's from Luzerne County, and he's on his way to help rebuild war-torn Ukraine. How can you help, and why is he going?
Well, I think it started with, you know, like everyone seeing these reports, and it was continuing to go over and over. When I realized that this was something that wasn't just going to stop, you know, I started to get really incensed about it. And, you know, donations really weren't enough. I thought that I could really have something to offer. So I started to research some volunteer groups, and I found this one, Volunteers for Ukraine. I applied to them for a volunteer position, and then they vetted me and hooked me up with a job board, which, you know, you can go through and apply for. And so I picked up the a volunteer building repair person, or handyman, rather, you know, in lack of a better term. And so they hooked me up with a Polish group, Folk Wisco, but They also have a vetting process. So I had to do Zoom calls and send them things through the email and documentation of certain things. So they agreed to take me on. So then they have air mile donors who obviously donate their air miles. So they hooked me up with one of those. And it took a couple tries because I think some donors were, you know, in between time, either use them or whatever happened. But so took about four of them by the time I got actually hooked up.
So when are you planning on leaving and how long will you be there?
Well, I'm planning on being out of here by the end of the month. So I still don't have my exact flight date. It's assured I'll be gone by the end of the month. It's a minimum 1 month commitment. I think that that'll probably be extended, but that would just be speculation on my part.
And I know your background is a police officer and you've retired from that. So going into a situation like this, Dan, we hear so much about it. We know that there's a lot of things that are going on over there. How is that going over in your mind and with the folks that you're leaving here?
Well, certainly it's created a lot of anxiety and for my family. You know, they're not specifically happy about it, but they realize the importance of the mission and how important it is to me. And so they're, you know, they're behind me, but they're also reluctant. But, you know, it's something I feel strongly about. And, you know, I have a conviction about it. And I think, you know, the Lord has a job for me to do, and he's pushed me that way.
So you also have a GoFundMe.
I do. Yes, I started that because there's expenses that have to be paid. And, you know, while I'm away, there's bills that are piled up. So I wanted to start that for that reason. But then it's kind of, I've met with some Russian Ukrainian pastors, and you know, they've had some refugees that were actually at their services that I attended, who came from Mariupol and the Donbass region, and they explained some things to me logistically about supplies and the kind of help that I'm looking to give through this group, that some of it's not reaching them. So they've asked for simple things, which is like ibuprofen, you know, multivitamins, pill packets, coffee, instant coffee. Just amazing to me that with all the aid going, that it's not necessarily reaching everybody. I mean, it's there, but I think it's just a logistical nightmare for people to go through it. That's another leg of what I want to try and do while I'm there, try and coordinate that better. Pray for me and safe passage, you know, and that my mission is fruitful and to recognize these people as, you know, the victims they are. Just keep me in your prayers, and I'll talk to you guys when I come back.
We wish Dan well on his journey, and of course, if he has the opportunity to call us while he's there or when he gets back, we'll share it with you here on Special Edition. One GoFundMe page is VFU, Volunteers for Ukraine. There's also another GoFundMe page under Daniel Griffin. We learned that Dan left this past Wednesday to fly to Ukraine, and those donated air miles that he talked about were not available. So he paid for the airfare himself. And yes, that's me typing in the background as Dan was talking so I could get all the information to pass it on to you. Now don't go away. When we come back, a big topic in the news, monkeypox on Special Edition. Next on Special Edition, LA County, Los Angeles, New York City, and San Francisco all earlier this week declaring emergencies due to rising cases of monkeypox. Health officials say it's not a time to panic, but be informed. Dawn Webster, Advanced Practice Clinician Director with MedExpress, has the information. Dawn Webster, always nice to have you here. And something that we're hearing about so much in the news is something called monkeypox. And can you give us a little bit of an explanation as to what that might be?
So monkeypox is a rare disease caused by an infection with the monkeypox virus. So this virus is part of the same family of viruses known as the variola virus that causes smallpox also. So because of that, the symptoms for monkeypox are very similar to the smallpox symptoms, but often much, much milder.
Is there any correlation between the name and the animal?
So actually it is. And one of the recommendations is if you are traveling to the areas that do have monkeypox, you want to avoid contact with non-human primates. which are monkeys, and apes and gorillas and any of the non-human primates. So yes, they can actually also get and spread this virus.
We're still in a mist of COVID. Is it prevalent? You said it's rare. So where has it been detected before?
So it's most common in Central and West Africa. And honestly, it truly is seen mostly in rodents and primates. So if you are traveling in that area, you're going to want to avoid sick or even dead animals, as well as their bedding or anything they may have touched. And it is very hard to spread. It is not like COVID in that it spreads easily. Essentially, it can be spread from person to person through direct contact with the infectious rash. And when I say infectious, I mean the lesions are still changing. So once they scab over and they're predominantly healed, it's really not even contagious anymore. Now, it can also be spread by respiratory droplets, but it has to be the prolonged contact. So kissing, sharing drinks, it's not just, you know, as easy as someone coughing two rooms away.
So how would you know that this is something that you have?
So the symptoms of monkeypox, because it's a virus, start as any other virus typically does. Fevers, headaches, muscle aches, chills, swollen lymph nodes, exhaustion, and then the rash. So the rash typically starts as red dots, and they can appear anywhere. So they can be on the face, in your mouth, on any parts of your body. And essentially, the rash is going to go through different stages. So it starts as red flat dots, and then they typically become bumps, what we call papules, and then they become pustules. So then they become filled with fluid. And that's when it's most contagious, and that's essentially when you're right in the midst of it. And then after that, they will start to heal and scab over. And then once the scabbing is resolving, you're no longer contagious. It's typically a 2 to 4 week process.
So there have been confirmed cases here throughout Pennsylvania. And again, they're not able to give anything specific because of confidentiality. So are there things that people can do in order to not come in contact with them?
The risk of getting it and the risk of it being around you is pretty low from what they know. However, if you are around someone that has recently traveled to one of those high-risk areas or has been in an area where they do have a significant outbreak, you're going to want to try to isolate them. So you're not going to want to go around them. You're not going to want to share bedding or towels. You're not going to want to, you know, touch any part of their body that looks like it may have a rash. And then the other thing to keep in mind is, because it is related to the smallpox virus, they believe that if you were immunized against smallpox, that also gives you protection against it. They're just not sure how much yet. That is good news.
The vaccination for smallpox is still available, correct?
It is. And the government actually has 2 stockpiled vaccines that can prevent monkeypox. So they have that for the people that are at high risk that are going to be going into these areas to help treat the people where there's outbreaks. So there are vaccines available for the people that are identified as high risk or that may need them.
Dawn, anything else that you would like to add? Because this is becoming a very big subject.
I think that the takeaway with this is pretty much just like we talk about when it's flu season or strep throat time, you know, just be diligent, wash your hands. If you're not feeling well, stay home and really think about the people that are at a higher risk that, you know, if you get monkeypox, it probably won't hurt you very much. It's generally not fatal, but in the people that are immunocompromised, the elderly, the young babies, those are the people that you really want to, you know, be careful of and watch out. You know, so just wash your hands. If you're not feeling well, stay home and really just, you know, keep those common sense things going that we kind of started with COVID.
Dawn Webster always shares good information with us on Special Edition. Now it's back. Dr. Srikanth Vimupalli and the hashtag Ask for Echo campaign. Let's start off with having you explain exactly what heart valve disease is.
Perfect. So your heart has 4 valves in it. And they are designed to allow blood to flow in one direction only. So heart valve disease is where any one or more of those valves either doesn't open properly to allow blood to go forward or leaks so that blood goes backwards.
Would you have any symptoms of this?
That's a great question. So when heart valve disease is in its early stages, there may not be much in the way of symptoms. As it progresses and gets more severe, patients often will feel shortness of breath, fatigue, or chest discomfort, or maybe even swelling in their legs. There are also versions of heart valve disease that can be genetic, and in the early versions of that, patients may not feel anything until it progresses.
Now, you mentioned genetic and not knowing it. So how prevalent then is heart valve disease?
That's a great question, Paula. So about 2.5% of the population has heart valve disease. So that means one in 40 people. And then once you hit the age of about 70, that goes up to about 13%. So one in eight people. It turns out, if you look at 65-year-olds and above, one in 15 people has undiagnosed moderate or severe heart valve disease. And that's really the problem. That's why we're conducting this campaign, Ask for Echo, is the fact that much of the time, heart valve disease is undiagnosed.
Well, let's talk about that. Hashtag Ask for Echo. What is that all about? And how would you even go about getting involved in that?
Yeah, so we're trying to reach out both to patients and providers to raise awareness of both the prevalence and the rate of underdiagnosis of heart valve disease. And it's important because there are certain types of heart valve disease that can be lethal. We know that aortic stenosis, which is a problem with the valve between the heart and the rest of the body, that valve doesn't open properly, that if you have severe aortic stenosis, within 2 years, 80% of patients will die if they're not treated. So we're trying to raise this awareness and tell people, look, if you have symptoms of chest pain, shortness of breath, swelling in your legs, fatigue, or if you have a family member who's been diagnosed with heart valve disease, you should be talking to your provider about, do I need an ultrasound of my heart?
And again, that's something that maybe a lot of people might have the symptoms of, but broaching that with their physician might be a little bit uncomfortable because they're thinking, well, this is something that I really don't know a lot about, but why would I even ask for an echo?
Yeah, I think the important things here are not only is it sort of under awareness for patients, there's under awareness amongst doctors as well. And so I don't think it's safe to assume that every doctor that a person sees knows about heart valve disease. And we mentioned all those symptoms. Those symptoms really reduce somebody's quality of life. And of course, we mentioned there are versions of heart valve disease that can result in death. So I think we want to empower patients to say, look, I'm having symptoms. I'm not feeling well. This could be heart valve disease, which could be lethal to me. It's reasonable for me to ask whether I should have an ultrasound to make the diagnosis.
And then what happens if you are told, yes, this is something that you have? Is there treatment? Does it only mean surgery? Can anything else be done?
That's a great question. So if heart valve disease is severe, 15 years ago, I would have said the treatments are generally surgery. And what I mean by that is you have to go into the hospital, have your chest opened up, stay in the hospital a couple of weeks, and then recover for several months out of the hospital after having had your valve repaired or replaced. But in the last 10 years, we now have minimally invasive techniques to repair and replace heart valves. So we can do this generally through a needle hole in the leg. The procedure is done one day, stay in the hospital overnight, leave the next day with no restrictions on your activities. So because we have these abilities to treat minimally invasively, it becomes even more important to make the diagnosis of heart valve disease.
And you mentioned echo, obviously echocardiogram. Can you explain to our listeners exactly what that process is? And just in case somebody has never had one or has been told that they would need one and don't know what to expect.
That's a great question. So an echo is an ultrasound of the heart. It's completely non-invasive. And what happens is it takes about 30 minutes and somebody basically will put some gel on your chest and then take pictures with an ultrasound machine of your heart. So you'll have moving pictures of your heart at the end of this. And any trained cardiologist can interpret these. These can be done in the office. They don't require a hospital stay. You can walk in and walk back out 30 minutes later.
So when you're talking about heart valve disease, one of the things that you did mention was the genetics. Are there things that people could do, maybe change diet, maybe exercise, the things that we always hear about keeping good health that might either stop it or maybe delay heart valve disease?
So it's not clear that diet or exercise and those types of things, or really anything in a patient's control, can change the progression of heart valve disease. Having said that, it's always a good idea to follow a proper diet and to exercise, in part because by exercising, you'll have symptoms sooner, which will mean you'll be able to make the diagnosis sooner. Also, it's always important to avoid things like smoking, because these things seem to be associated with heart valve disease, but it's not clear to us that if you stop doing these things, that it will prevent heart valve disease.
And once again, you mentioned the fact of going to your doctor and talking about your symptoms, and many people don't yet realize or don't yet take the wherewithal to become their own advocate. How important is that?
I think that that is very important, not just in heart valve disease, which of course is under-recognized by both patients and providers, but in all of medicine. Patients are integral parts of the healthcare team that's taking care of them. And healthcare is more effective when patients are engaged. And so I know this is difficult and a little bit different maybe than what we've had culturally over the last 50 or 100 years, but an engaged patient who's advocating for themselves is generally going to do the best.
Before we have to let you go, I'm sure that some of our listeners are hearing this and maybe they are looking to get more information. But again, there's so much information out there. Sometimes it points you in the wrong direction. Is there a place where they could go and get exactly what they need to know about hashtag Ask for Echo?
So we have a website, askforecho.com. That's the number four. And patients can go there and get information about the topics we've been talking about here. And they can also sign up if they'd like to be involved in the campaign.
Thank you so much. But before I let you go, is there anything that maybe we left out or that you would like to make sure that our listeners know?
Paula, I think the take home for people is heart valve disease is common. It can be lethal. It's underdiagnosed. And that you need an ultrasound of your heart to diagnose it, especially if you have symptoms of shortness of breath, chest pain, fatigue, or swelling.
Congressman Dan Muser, next on Special Edition.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey. podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Republican Congressman Dan Muser, representing the 9th Congressional District, sits down with Odyssey's Nikki Stone.
We are joined by Congressman Dan Muser. Thank you so much. It's a little far from election time. What are you doing here so early? Usually people don't come in until like 2 weeks before the election. And here you are sitting ready to talk to people.
We're always talking to people. It's great to be here with you, Nikki. I really appreciate it. It's a great opportunity. Look forward to covering a lot of subjects. And,
yes.
You know, we run every 2 years, and some people say, wow, that's too much. I mean, you know, all you're doing is campaigning. But it forces us, if you need to be forced, to stay close to your constituents, to always be out there. You know, we're in Washington 3 out of 4 weeks, usually, sometimes only 2 out of 4. And when we're in district, it's not off time, it's go time. And I got a great district team. And the way I look at it, 50% of my job is here in the district, and 50% of my job is fighting hard in Washington.
And helping the people of your district.
Oh, yes. That's our constituent services. Just like when I was in business, customer service was number one. Constituent services is number one with our team.
Now, there's going to be some changes in your district come next year, right?
Yeah. We had redistricting, which took place arbitrarily 3 years ago. We won't get into that. But every 10 years with the new census, we have redistricting based upon the distribution of the population. You know, some people move into some areas, some enter new areas. Pennsylvania grew less than other states. So therefore, we lost a congressional seat. We're going to go from 18 congressional seats to 17. So my district changed. I'll be picking up about 60,000 new constituents.
So you're not losing anybody. You're gaining.
Well, I'm gaining, but I am actually losing. The only county I'm losing is Carbon County, which is a shame because it's a beautiful place. But I am picking up Wyoming County, Susquehanna County, Bradford County, Sullivan County, and a good portion of Lycoming out to Williamsport. And that's in addition to the counties that I currently have, which is Western Luzerne County, Schuylkill County, Northumberland County, Lebanon, and a good portion of Berks County.
Wow.
So we have Montour, we have Danville, we have Geisinger, and that whole area.
Oh, wow. And we're going to appreciate having you in Wyoming County where I live.
Yeah, I know. You're up in Nicholson.
Yes.
I love Nicholson, sure.
It's nice. Bridge Day is coming up in September. Don't forget that.
Right. Excellent.
I'll try to give you the date for it when I figure it out myself.
We'll go to the office. I've been there in a little while.
Oh, the office. Yes. Kim and Scott Islesworth. Yes.
It's been a while since I've been up there. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Nice place.
Yep.
Good food, too. So
there
you go.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of elephants in the room to discuss. Trying to figure out which one to start with is so difficult. But unfortunately, hearing of another shooting.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, like even your Vice President Harris, saying that she wants Congress to approve the where does she called on Congress to ban assault weapons. Mm. and then you have already approved one gun control bill that Biden was to sign into law. So where do we stand with this? What more can be done? I mean, I know there's background checks in that bill that was signed. This guy passed every background check, yeah, and he had a mental history that was not, was a little shady.
Yeah. You know, clearly we have a serious problem in our country and related to mental illness and related to that type of violence, both on the, let's call it the massacre level, as well as the streets of Chicago, the streets of Philadelphia, the streets of New York, pretty out of control. Philadelphia has had more homicides this year than ever before, more than New York City, and yet we have one third the population. Okay, so that doesn't get talked about much. So we have a very, very serious violence and assault and law enforcement problem. So I'll just start with that, okay? And I'm going to keep it apolitical. I'm going to keep it objective. The idea that any individual in any elected office would ever not be supportive of the police is completely unacceptable. Okay? There are problems within the police force from time to time. We must back the blue. We must support law enforcement. If we don't, we will be living in a very uncivil society. And you know what? We are. People aren't going to Philadelphia. People aren't going to New York. Businesses are moving out of Chicago to safer areas where they support law enforcement. So we need to enforce and put people away for committing violent crimes. It's not happening. People are getting out, okay? We had a member of Congress, not that anybody from Congress is special, but a member of Congress was held up at gunpoint in Philadelphia. Now, granted, it was two minors, one 19-year-old. Each one of those persons were violent criminals, basically, were out within 3 days. Okay? Does that make any sense? We had fentanyl. Okay? I'm moving around here a little bit. Like almost 100 pounds of fentanyl was discovered in a car in California, right? And people were arrested, brought in. They were out in 2 days. That's enough fentanyl to kill half of California, all right? And, of course, coming up from the southern border. So if we want to address the problem, we need to start with a high level of law enforcement, okay, high levels of bail, and people, frankly, going to jail. The punishments have to be there. Now, on the tragedy that's occurring in our schools. Look, my kids are in their 20s, but that doesn't make any difference. They obviously were young once. I look at this like, what if the next one is someone I love? You know why? Because every time it is someone somebody loves, obviously. Terribly tragic. Uvalde was tragic. Buffalo was tragic. What just occurred in Highland and outside of Chicago. Awful, awful, awful. And then, of course, another that was stopped. So a bill was passed. A bill was passed. And I don't want to get too long on this, but and 9/10 of that bill was very, very good. I was involved in it. I helped support. I helped design. It was about just what you brought up. It was about looking into people's juvenile pasts, making that part of the NIC system, the national system for background checks. I believe that should be included during a background check. Okay, that's now in that national bill. Also, mental illness. We passed several that I voted for, several bills to support and help mental illness. But there were two aspects of this bill that I had issue with. One was they would not affirm the requirement of due diligence for red flag laws. Now, you can't have someone, a neighbor who's mad at their neighbor, make a call to the police and say, hey, that guy's crazy. You know, I've seen him do crazy things. And based upon hearsay, not any sort of evidentiary standard, that person could be arrested and brought before a judge. Okay, there needs to be I had two amendments to that bill. One would require an evidentiary standard. The other would require a due process for adjudication for a judge and a right to appeal. Because let's face it, some judges are liberal. They might have a judge that just hates guns. So therefore, based upon hearsay, that individual who never did anything, okay, because there was no evidentiary standard. So anyway, those two aspects were missing. But I will just state this. First of all, look, we have a Second Amendment right. The right of law-abiding citizens to bear arms should not be questioned. That's how it's written in the Pennsylvania Constitution. We all know our Second Amendment in the U.S. Constitution. I support our Second Amendment rights 100%, okay, because if we don't, we are taking away the right for people to defend themselves. Yet, we have this mental illness problem. We have a background check problem, as just discussed, but we cannot allow that to move forward without a due process standard, which is fair to determine mentally ill people and violent people from law-abiding people based upon hearsay.
Now, the one thing with this, when we discussed this, and you say going back into their what they did as teenagers and whatnot, one of the things I think about is this new thing that they also wanted to push through, where you have, I'm trying to think, the Disinformation Governments Board. You know, they were talking about that, and where who determines what disinformation is. But where I'm tying this in is, these people were out on the internet making threats, yeah. Many of them. I mean, how many cases do we see where they're making threats on the internet and nobody does anything about it?
Should have been picked up.
Instead of doing a disinformation governance board, yeah. Wouldn't it be more appropriate to have a threat governance board or something like that?
Yes. You know, after 9/11, the United States set up a counterterrorism organization, right? Homeland Security. And you know what? It worked. Now, some people might have a problem with that because we had the Patriot Act, where they were allowed to listen in, where they thought the FBI, when they thought there was a conversation taking place, it worked. We should have such a task force reviewing just what you're bringing up, internet, those who are stating that they're going to kill people, bring harm to people, and engage in such murderous massacres, and that worked after 9/11.
Don't you think if you put the word kill in, guns in, it would at least kind of flag those? Like, I mean, if you could do that, why can't you do this?
Look, the last several don't really make any sense. The last several massacres, I mean, murders, mass murders. Okay, these individuals sent out all kinds of signals, and now law enforcement may have been found that they were confined to what they could do, and that can't be the case. All right, well, they need to be able to engage on those individuals, have them go through a mental illness evaluation. And if they're deemed to be a threat, then they need a temporary removal of their firearms. This bill is not terrible that's passed. I am concerned, obviously, what I stated. But outside of that, hopefully it's a step in the right direction and things are done according to our constitutional rights.
All right. People are concerned about the economy, gas prices, oil prices. We have Donald in Pittston on the phone who wants to ask. Got to go to break. And we will be right back with Congressman Dan Meeser.
That would be great. I'll promise to keep my answer is a little shorter.
I know it's hard because there's so much to explain on all of this stuff. Donald from Pittston is on the phone. Hello, Donald.
All right. First of all, I want to talk about oil. I'm not in love with Biden's energy policy, but with that said, I'm a political historian. July 10th of 2008, oil hit $147 a barrel. Price of gasoline is $4 a gallon. Today it's $100 a barrel. The price is close to $5. Adjusted to inflation should be $5.40. Employed by oil companies, they wanted to get up to 540, so they're using this as an excuse because the difference in $50, it was $50 more July 10th of 08 at $4 a gallon, here paying $5, that's $100 a barrel. You know what I'm saying? It was $147 back then at the height before the crash in July of 08. What's your comment on that? You don't think there's no gouging at all? I mean, someone trying to make an extra couple bucks here for the stockholders?
Well, look, I certainly remember 08. I don't have the metrics on.
I have it down for you. I researched things. I'm not somebody crazy calling.
No, I got it.
Stolen elections.
There were some different issues, our level of capacity. Like, for instance, if right now the U.S. was at much higher capacity than we are now, if we were producing 1 million barrels more a day, or maybe even a little bit more than that, as we were in 2019, we would then be, quote unquote, energy independent, and we would be able to control the price better. Now, I have spoken to, since Joe Biden came out with his remarks about gas station owners, 60% of gas station owners are small businessmen. They own one, two, maybe three. And then you've got the Sheets and the others and the Sunocos, and we'll talk about that in a second. But the thing is this, they buy their gasoline from the rack. It's a term, when I was revenue secretary, knew the term very well. They buy that from the rack at about 9 cents profit. 9 cents gross profit. That doesn't include their operational overhead, and it certainly doesn't include taxes. So the idea that Joe Biden, and I got to also say this, my friend Matt Cartwright just ran an ad stating that gas stations were gouging their customers. That was outrageous, okay? It was ignorant, and it was false, because that's not what's occurring.
But the numbers I'm looking at tell you are real, and it is a disparity. You know, 147 to 100, and now you're paying an extra buck. I know the commodities market was hot back there in 08, but...
Well, there were a couple of other things taking place, right? We had a huge financial crisis. The government at the time, Obama, was not on the attack of the domestic energy industry. If you want to invest in an industry, but the White House, the president, and most Democrats who are fully in charge are on basically an assault on domestic energy. And that's what's occurred. Nobody can state anything different. I'll state it objectively. There's a list of about 50 items that they've done, including not issuing permits. When Obama was in office, he issued 202 permits at this point in his term. You know how many the Biden administration's issued so far? Two. And that was only in the last few months. They banned, they prohibited drilling in the Gulf. They prohibited new areas in Alaska. If they open those up, and if they literally called off their dogs, and that's what they are, he's got dogs at the SEC. And look, I'm just stating that. I know that's a derogatory term, but that's what's happening. The SEC and the Fed are threatening and warning financial banks, even some of our local banks. John Kerry has stated to financial institutions, you don't want to be caught holding these toxic assets come a year from now, because they want to go after the industry, and that is what is keeping the industry from investing in the future.
I want you to respect mine. I think we're being gouged about 83 cents a gallon. That's why I crunched the numbers. I'm not debating saying what you're saying is wrong.
Yeah.
He said he's going to eliminate fossil fuels. Biden, right. I have it on my own eyes.
I'll check out the comparison on the 08, but I just know what's happening now. I know where the margins are, and the world market does set the price, and it really comes down to supply and demand come the end of the day. We need to increase our capacity, and the Biden administration and far too many Democrats in the House and Senate refuse to do it. They are the cause of the high gasoline prices, not the local gas stations, not Putin. I mean, Putin contributed to some of it because we became non-energy independent. Any geopolitical rattling of the world economy, we should have learned that from the 70s and the 80s, and yet we didn't. Biden and gang let us become energy dependent, and that's the largest reason, not just for the high gasoline prices, not just the high heating oil prices, just wait for winter to come, but for inflation. That's the cause of food increases. The farmers, the fertilizer, our natural gas, it's all related. It's like a contagion that takes place, and it's driving, and on top of the other things that they're doing, all the spending that they've done, the Fed bears some responsibility here for over stimulus, but and even China has the fact that we rely too much on China and the holdups on goods there. Ooh. So there's various contributing factors. But if it wasn't for the Biden administration policies backed by far too many Democrats in office and meanwhile blaming everybody else, our gasoline prices would be a good dollar, if not $1.30, if not $1.40 less, maybe where they were in 08.
With this overturning of Roe versus Wade, that just as the Constitution says, gives it back to the states, people are now up in arms thinking that, you know, if they're in a gay marriage, that's going to be overturned. That gay marriage is also going to become illegal. They're worried about other forms of birth control becoming illegal. Yeah. What are your thoughts on some of that?
Yeah. Well, nothing was made illegal. Roe versus Wade was overturned, as well as Planned Parenthood versus Casey. And in many ways, that was just as important because Bob Casey, our former governor, current Senator Bob Casey's father, brought forth that a pregnancy should be prohibited from being aborted after 24 weeks, and 24 weeks, 6 months, and Planned Parenthood sued, and the Supreme Court upheld that you can't stop an abortion after 24 weeks. So that's one of the big problems, that the Democrats in Congress have gotten so extreme on this. I mean, Nikki, we tried to issue a petition, a sense of Congress, that said late-term partial birth abortions should be illegal, mm-hmm. right? Should be federally banned. And I think we got one member of the House Democrat to vote with Republicans.
Well, we had to follow the science on COVID, but we don't follow the science on when a baby is formed. Because that, to some people, can't be determined. Never mind. I can't even go there.
But you know what? Nothing was made illegal. Mm-hmm. The Supreme Court stated that they should be neutral on the issue. That's what's occurred. They've now neutral. It is now up to the states to consider all stakeholders and develop laws, and the people and the state legislators should develop laws that are in the interest of the mother, the father, the baby, and life.
Now, this person who texted in with this question, ask him a question that helps me decide on actually voting. Does he think gay marriage should be legal or illegal in PA? Yes or no?
No. I don't think it should be illegal.
You don't think it should be illegal?
No.
So, okay. Thank you. I don't like people who just vote based on where they can have sex. That bothers me, or who they can have sex with, or how often they can. But they wanted me to ask that question, so I did.
I think we are a free nation. I think that for a lot of reasons, my answer is no. We shouldn't be getting into people's preference. Look, when the issue was changed, I was Secretary of Revenue at the time under Tom Corbett. When the Supreme Court overturned it and the state allowed it, it was interesting because, look, everybody wanted to respect the institution of marriage between a man and a woman. Get that. So I thought perhaps it should be known as gay marriage or civil unions or something of that nature. But it's been law now for nine, 10 years. And I am for the rights of all people, regardless of what their religion, sexual preference is. So, again, my answer is no.
Okay. No, you have a busy schedule. You have places to be. But we will have you back in again. Thank you again, Congressman Dan Muser, for joining us in the studio. I really appreciate it. And I look forward to seeing you lots between now and November.
You too, Nikki. Thanks very much.
Thanks for listening to Special Edition, a weekly look at the issues in the news and the personalities shaping the stories.
Spring is a time of renewal. So why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.